Copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
Artificial intelligence and the metaphysics of mind. So what I'm going to be talking about is the difference between some rather extravagant claims made by those who push a program called artificial general intelligence and the claims made in my discipline, the philosophy of mind. And there's a big gap between those two. So there are some people, and Ray Kurzweil and Ben Goetzel are among the most notorious, who claim that sometime this century we will have artificial general intelligence. It will be a singularity. That means something which is unprecedented in history, never happened before. And we have had many of these. Gutenberg's printing press, the telephone, radio. Then we had general purpose digital computers with the stored program concept so that you can change their program and they can solve any kind of problem simply by changing their software. Those have already happened. What these individuals claim will happen this century, perhaps mid of this century, is artificial general intelligence, which means that artificial systems would have the same kind of adaptable general intelligence that you can take from one domain to another. You can apply to a domain that you have never investigated before, much as human beings can learn new languages, new problem-solving strategies, right? That's what's meant by general intelligence. It's not like simply an artificial intelligence system that's very good at chess, all right? We've already seen grandmasters defeated in chess by AI systems like Deep Blue, all right? As impressive as that is very domain-specific, and the program only applies to chess, right? Artificial general intelligence would mean that it has the kind of intelligence that you and I have, where we can learn completely new crafts, theories, practices. Some already, including Nick Bostrom at Oxford, are already speaking of superintelligence, which means that the machines will have more intelligence than human beings. They will transcend our intelligence. This could be independently of humans, or it could be what is called transhumanism, where you will have enhanced human beings who will have additions, possibly external to their body, but also they have talked about internally to the brain and elsewhere, which will enhance human capabilities. So that's the what frames this issue. It's a rather disturbing development. It's a rather obvious example of a Tower of Babel, where the idea that through human reason we can reach up and transcend ourselves and, in fact, leave ourselves behind. And Nick Bostrom, of course, is concerned about the ethical issues if we have systems increasingly making decisions that used to be made by human beings. Will we even be able to control what they do? Now, one of the biggest problems in any discussion of artificial intelligence is actually, what does the word intelligence mean? And it's amazing how naive many books are on this subject. They'll get right into the latest developments in artificial intelligence and spend next to no time actually saying what intelligence is. How can you know what artificial intelligence is if you don't know what intelligence is? Now, following a kind of a scientific operational model, many have thought that it's something external, it's behavioral. If a system can produce intelligent behavior and seems like an intelligent system, well, you know, if it looks like a duck and it quacks like a duck, perhaps it is a duck, right? Externally, it seems intelligent, so fine, we'll call it intelligent. But as artificial intelligence research has progressed, people have realized it's much too easy to seem intelligent without being intelligent. And so they have been concerned, well, doesn't it matter how you solve the problem? Does it mirror mental problem-solving processes? Does it actually carry out the kind of process that's going on in the brain? And so they'd be much more concerned with how it's done, some power or capacity. It's a very different picture. Now, obviously, then, this is important, because if we don't agree about what intelligence is, we'll certainly disagree about what counts as artificial intelligence. Many proponents of artificial intelligence complain that every time they solve a problem, people say, yeah, but that doesn't matter, right? That doesn't really matter anyway. I mean, it's obvious machines could do that, and they feel rather upset at this after all their hard work. But think about a simple analogy, artificial fruit. If all you care about is the appearance, you could have wax or plastic fruit, right? It's externally like fruit. But of course, it doesn't taste like fruit. Okay, so that would be the behavioral model. The outside is all that matters. Or do you care about the inside? What are the strategies, the processes? What is it like on the inside? Still, you might just be modeling a brain, and there already is software that models neuronal connections. The real challenge is to have something that really is fruit, right? It's the real thing, but it's produced synthetically, right? That would then count as artificial intelligence in the strong sense. There are these two famous paradigms, and I'm sure many of you have heard of these. This goes back to the work of John Searle in the 1980s, where he distinguished weak AI and strong AI. And the idea of weak AI is that you are simulating intelligence. Okay, you're developing software that enables a computer or other system to solve problems which it would require intelligence for a human being to do. Okay, so if it can learn your voice, all right, if you have a voice-activated computer, or if it learns languages, right, it can do something which it requires us intelligence to do, and in that sense it simulates intelligence. But it's not claiming the system itself is intelligent. Strong AI is the much more interesting claim that says that the artificial system would have intelligence of its own. Now, artificial general intelligence can be viewed in two ways. For some, it's simply the latest, greatest advance in weak AI. In other words, it will simulate intelligence better because it will capture the human ability to generalize and solve problems in new domains. But others speak of machines waking up, right? And in a sense, having their own autonomous intelligence, and then we would have truly artificial intelligence around us. And you'll notice this comes up in quite a lot of movies. Okay, just to explain then these two paradigms. The weak paradigm basically was developing artificial intelligence to understand the human mind better by modeling its operations. Okay, and then as time went on, it also modeled neural operations. Parallel distributed processing was an attempt to model the way that the brain functions. But of course, a simulated tornado is not a tornado. A simulated intelligence is not intelligent. As Searle described it, the claim of strong AI is the appropriately programmed computer is a mind. It is a center of its own intelligence. That is, that it can literally understand and have other cognitive states. So you can actually literally talk about its thoughts, its goals, its beliefs, its desires, okay? That is very different from merely simulating human intelligence. Now, standard AI, which was popular in the 70s and 80s, was very domain specific. The most outstanding successes here were in expert systems, where you took data and rules from human experts, and then you could, for example, check to see whether a medical diagnosis was correct or if a legal decision was correct. But they only work in that specific domain. The goal of AGI, artificial general intelligence, is to develop general problem-solving capacities that you can apply to new domains. You can train a system using data that was not programmed into it, and it can make discoveries there. Now notice, and unfortunately in the literature, many people think that if you have AGI, you automatically have strong AI. This is a mistake. Just because you simulate general problem-solving strategies rather than domain-specific ones does not mean the system itself has its own intelligence. That could still just be weak AI, just very sophisticated weak AI. Now, Nick Bostrom lists some things which he thinks we would expect out of AGI, a capacity to learn, the ability to deal with uncertainty and probability, a faculty for extracting useful concepts, both from sensory data and its own internal states, he says, and the ability for logical and intuitive reasoning. Because these are really general capacities that enable human beings to solve problems in a variety of domains, why we're so adaptable and creative. Now, some of the approaches to artificial general intelligence is interesting, but the idea that you simply develop algorithms has fallen on hard times. Many of those have been shown to have limitations. Even genetic algorithms, which learn by trial and error, seem to have serious limitations on how far you can generalize them. And so whole brain emulation is a popular approach. This is kind of amazing, but scanning tissue slices. And then the idea is that eventually you will be able to emulate an entire brain and all of its connections in software. So you have a virtual brain inside of a computer system. Another approach is biological cognition to enhance biological brains, perhaps by biomedical enhancements of various kinds, or embryo selection is a rather horrifying method where you develop embryos and every 2 years you harvest the sex cells and develop a new set of embryos following a eugenic path. You pick those which you think will have the best genetic characteristics. Now, of course, this in a way is cheating because we're dealing with biological systems where we're already presuming that they are intelligent. All right, you're just trying to optimize it in a eugenic fashion. But you can also have brain-computer interfaces either outside of the body or inside of the brain. They're a little bit worried about cancer developing if you put things inside the brain, of course. Combining brains, two heads are better than one. So the idea that you literally network people's physical brains to solve problems. Another view inspired by the internet is that, well, perhaps just it's the amount of connectivity in harnessing networks. And some people, this is a minority view, an out there view, is the idea that someday the internet, you know, wakes up and it has its own consciousness, you know, and then maybe when you talk to Siri, it gets a bit more disturbing. Yeah, the question was how seriously are these taken? It is not seriously taken that the internet would wake up, but the idea of whole brain emulation is an ongoing area of scientific research. It's turned out to be much more difficult. The history of AI, if you read the histories of AI, they all say the same thing. Extravagant promises followed by a discovery that this is really hard stuff, and then more modest actual success. And that's happened over and over again in the history of artificial intelligence. So it may be this is still a ways off, but whole brain emulation is a serious scientific research program. Do philosophers, mainstream philosophers, draw a line between consciousness and having intelligence? Well, for some purposes, the answer is yes. Psychologists talk about level one and level two system. The level one system in a human being is what's called the adaptive unconscious, and this allows us to solve problems without consciously thinking through them. And so one might take the view that certain kinds of intelligence, it wouldn't be surprising if you could develop them artificially. But on the other hand, the consciousness seems to be associated with particular acts of creativity or solving problems in logic and mathematics where a great deal of conscious attention is required. So yeah, that's a very good question. So going back to what we mean by intelligence, and this was the question that was asked before. Sorry, I didn't get your name.
David.
For many, operational intelligence, sometimes called Turing test intelligence, after his famous imitation game in his 1950 paper on computing machinery and intelligence by Alan Turing, we define intelligence simply in the terms that, well, it will solve problems that humans require intelligence to solve. It passes intelligence tests, so it appears intelligent. And passing enough tests like that certainly might establish weak artificial general intelligence, right, if it's generalizable enough, because all you care about there is simulation. But many philosophers of mind would emphasize intrinsic intelligence, the idea that the system has its own intelligence. Before you can have your own intelligence, you first have to be a mental subject. You can't just be a collection of resources, okay? Because you have to have your own thoughts, your own goals. They belong to you. You can actually be credited with understanding the problem and using your own reasoning and creativity to solve it. That is a very different notion. So if strong artificial general intelligence is to succeed, I think it has to generate such a subject that can literally be credited with having these mental states. Now here's just a diagram of the Turing test. What you have are three figures here. You have the interrogator, okay, who is able to ask any question that he or she likes. Then you have a human being who is asked to just be themselves and answer the questions as they normally would. And then in the third partition, you have a computer which is programmed to answer questions just as a human would. And in the simulation game, as Turing described it, the object is simply this, that if the computer can pass as the human as often as the human passes as the human, then they are indistinguishable, and we may as well say that the computer is intelligent, right? So it's an operational view. It just goes by the behavior. And of course, the test can be adapted to handle multiple domains. If you sort of think, yeah, well, that was because we only asked about cricket or baseball, right? How will it do if we keep changing the subject? But you can, of course, easily adapt Turing's test to go over many domains to defeat that kind of thing. However, notice it treats intelligence as behavioral, and that, to many people, seems superficial, because what we really think of as intelligence is a problem-solving capacity. It's an ability. And abilities are more than just behaviors, okay? After all, alright, to give one obvious example, if you listened to a radio broadcast of Albert Einstein, you would hear many intelligent things. You would be mistaken if you concluded from that the radio was intelligent. An unintelligent source can produce intelligent output because it's a channel, it's broadcast through it or it's programmed into it. And in fact, philosophers have pointed out that the Turing test is weak on two grounds. It's neither necessary nor sufficient for real intelligence. It's not necessary because there's no contradiction in the idea of an intelligent being who can't communicate. Okay, perhaps they have speech or motor disorder, or they're epileptic, or perhaps they're an alien. Okay, or, you know, perhaps they're just from some country where we can't understand what they're saying. We're back to Babel. That would not show that they're unintelligent simply because we couldn't understand their answers.
Well, the questions are about baseball and the European has to answer, so...
Yes, Yes, or for that matter, cricket for most Europeans. So, and passing the test is also not sufficient for intelligence, right? Intelligent output can be relayed through an unintelligent. We talk about smartphones, but really we don't think the phones are smart. Okay. And of course, Searle's Chinese Room argument, which is very famous, is a good illustration of this. To generalize that, you can always set up a system with a vast database of questions and answers. And for every question on the list, it has an associated answer. And to make it more human, you can have things like, I don't know. And when my wife and I are asked about Donald Trump, we say, gosh, is that the time? And things like that, right? Because we don't want to answer those questions. And intelligent people do evade questions, right? So I wouldn't have to get them right all the time to pass as a human being. So there it is, the man in the Chinese room. He is given questions, okay, which are in Chinese symbols. He has a book that correlates the questions with answers. And so by matching the patterns, or syntax, as Searle says, he can provide the correct answer to a question. And Searle's point, of course, is that typical artificial intelligent programs are doing that. They are doing pattern processing and pattern matching. And given a certain pattern that means something, either to us or someone else, they can produce a pattern that means also means something to us or someone else, but it doesn't mean anything to the machine. It doesn't have to. Okay? And the problem there really is with what he calls intentionality, which I'll come back to, which is not knowing what the symbols are about. They're being matched, as it were, by their shape or their appearance, but not by their content. So this person could pass as an intelligent, well, assuming he's awfully quick at, you know, paging through books, as an intelligent Chinese speaker without understanding any Chinese at all. Now, passing the Turing test in a wide variety of domains might be evidence of weak artificial intelligence, weak artificial general intelligence, as long as it's not a brute force approach, as long as it uses general problem-solving strategies, and it can adjust those. The more sophisticated algorithms can actually adjust themselves. So the game-playing strategies become superior. If it learns that a certain approach leads to it losing the game, then that strategy is given a lower weight. If a strategy leads to a success, it can be given a higher weight, and so you can adapt what strategies you use dynamically over time. Now, my guess is that weak artificial general intelligence will be developed. I don't know when, but it seems entirely plausible to me, because the only difference between this and the conventional AI is that you're dealing with more abstract patterns. It's just a matter of pattern matching. So if it's at the level of laws of nature, they've already had an AI system that was able to find from data Kepler's laws, for example. Very impressive. Okay. So I think most likely it will be developed. But of course, that would not establish strong AGI. And this is because self-adjusting algorithms can be implemented by a system which does not have its own cognitive states, which cannot literally be said to have its own goals, its own understanding, its own reasoning, and its own creativity. Now, again, this might be a good model. Going back to the question before, this might be a good question, a good model of our unconscious intelligence. Okay, so that might be helpful. But why do I think it will not capture this? This will not be enough for strong artificial general intelligence. Basically, because there's this metaphysical gap, I claim, between machines and the way the mind works. And I think it's all machines. It's even the brain. If you want to think of the brain purely physically, there's a gap between the brain understood as a physical device and what the mind is capable of. The mind has, I claim, intrinsic intelligence, and I can't talk about all the aspects of this. But four characteristics: subjectivity. Only subjects can have thoughts. Okay? Now, you might say, what about a library? Well, a library contains information, but a book does not contain thoughts. The mind of the author contains thoughts. A library book only contains information. And if you speak your thoughts or you write them down, you produce either a noise in the air or an inscription on paper, but those words are not thoughts. The thought resides only in a mind. Intentionality is critical, the ability to think about other things. We can direct our thoughts on other things. Teleology, that we have our own goals, personal goals, and rationality, the ability to reason. And you might think that's surprising, because surely if there's one thing AI can do, it's very good at reasoning and solving problems. But I'll claim that artificial intelligence systems do not reason in the way that we do, and there's a gap there all of the same. Okay, I'm going to have to hold questions for a bit. I'm sorry, but I just, all right, subjectivity. If an entity is intrinsically intelligent, it has to have its own thoughts. In other words, not just containing information. So a hard drive, as much as it contains lots of information, I don't think is an intrinsic intelligence. Thoughts are intrinsically subjective. They cannot be ownerless. There has to be a mind that has a thought. And you can see this because that thought cannot be detached from a mind. So you and I might agree on something. So I think it's sunny outside, and so do you. But you have your thought, and I have my thought, all the same. Even though we agree, your thought is defined by its belonging to you, and mine by its belonging to me. So a subject literally has thoughts and experiences, and it's self-aware. You can know what it's like to be yourself. In philosophy of mind, there's a lot of attention to what are called qualia. And the idea is, well, you know what it's like to feel pain, for example, right? Somebody else can notice that you're in pain, but they cannot share what it's like for you to feel pain. No matter how much they empathize, pain belongs to that one subject. Intentionality, there's also a need to be able to think about objects and states of affairs. It's not good enough that there are codes of various kinds which we interpret as being about those states of affairs. That's really Searle's point. Now, what's interesting about our thoughts is they're always directed on something else. They're by nature of or about something beyond themselves. So we can think the Taj Mahal is in India, or two is the lowest even prime. And without intentionality, we can't really understand. Intentionality is what enables us to think about what the symbols mean, right? What does this symbol mean that's being manipulated in Searle's Chinese room? So that's the second thing we need. Teleology. We need to have goals, our own goals. So that part of the problem with Deep Blue beating Kasparov, for example, is no one thinks that it was trying to beat Kasparov, right? It did, but we don't think that that was a goal of the system and it was acting to solve that goal. So to be an intrinsic intelligence, you have to have your own goals to aim to gain knowledge, solve problems. They're not just the derived goals of the designers who are using the system to solve their own problems. And for that, you need subjectivity and intentionality, because you have to have a subject so the goals are personal, and you have to be able to think about a state of affairs as desirable. Well, that's intentionality. So if Joe wants a vacation in Budapest, or I want another double espresso, right? The teleology requires first that you have a subject who can think about things and then can also desire those as goals. Rationality, if it's intrinsic, means that you can use your own reason to solve problems. Now, this is tricky because computer systems do mirror reason. That's the way they're designed, because they have an arithmetic logic unit and they're obedient to the rules of arithmetic logic and so forth. In order to have true rationality in the sense that I'm speaking of, though, you need to have a subject that thinks about the world, has certain goals, and uses its thinking to achieve those goals. It's actually using its own reason to solve its own problems. All right, now why do I think that artificial and general intelligence will not have intrinsic intelligence? One reason is a general argument against materialism. It's also an argument against thinking that we should identify the mind with the brain, and that is the simplicity of mental subjects. You can't divide minds into parts in the way that you can divide physical systems, including the brain or computers, into parts. But intentionality is not something physical, unlike these physical AI systems. But I don't think there's any teleology in these AGI systems. They don't have their own goals. And although they mirror reason wonderfully, and they can solve problems a lot faster than us, sometimes with terrifying results, as in machine trading on Wall Street, which is so fast that ordinary human traders can't keep up with it. So they can mirror that kind of reasoning tremendously well. I don't think they're reasoning in the way that we do. Now, simplicity of mental subjects. This deals with the part of the problem is that these AGI systems are physical systems. Their capacities are being understood physically. And this runs into the famous hard problem of consciousness in the philosophy of mind. That you can completely describe any physical system in impersonal terms, and there is no implication at all that that system will be conscious, that there is anything it's like to be that system. It's not aware of the world. It's not thinking about the world. There's no reason to think that there is something it is like to be an AGI system, even if it's doing a whole brain emulation successfully. So it does a wonderful model of all the processing going on in the brain. Still, there is no reason to think that that system is conscious. It doesn't follow from any of the descriptions that we have made. Subjectivity requires there is one unified subject. You'll notice that right now you can be thinking, you can be aware that it's sunny outside, you can perhaps be feeling a little tired or ready for the coffee break or whatever it might be. You can have multiple experiences and thoughts at one time, and all of them belong to just one subject. We don't have one subject per experience, right? It's not like one of those multi-screen cinemas where you've got 12 or 20 movies playing at the same time, and for each one you'd have a different mental subject, one mental subject that unites all of these different thoughts and experiences. Physical systems, though, consist of separable parts. Think of an engine, you can take it apart, a computer, you can take it apart, and even the brain consists of separable parts. You can take a neuron out of the brain, and intrinsically that neuron will be the same whether it's inside the brain or outside the brain, and even if you insert it in somebody else's brain. But we can't separate thoughts from their thinkers. The fact that a particular person thinks something is crucial to what that thought is. Your thought that Poland is beautiful is different than mine, right? We agree in what we believe, but you have your thought and I have my thought. Gottfried Leibniz, since we're in Europe, we've got to bring up a heavy hitter from Europe. Okay, he noticed this long ago, how brilliant he was developing calculus, but also offering a powerful argument against artificial intelligence. He developed a mechanical calculator himself, and he certainly foresaw the idea of computers. Brilliant man. And he says, well, let's suppose you have a machine that produces thinking, feeling, and perceiving. Imagine it enlarged to be a big mill, so you can walk inside. But what would you see? Nothing but parts which push and move each other, and never anything that could explain perception, i.e. awareness, consciousness, the unity of our thought. Nothing about what you would observe would ever suggest to you that this system was conscious or could perceive or think for itself. The explanation must therefore be sought in the simple substance, not in the composite, that is, in the machine. And a recent philosopher who's taken up this argument is David Barnett in a rather rudely titled essay called You Are Simple. Well, what he means by that is not that you are unintelligent. He's not saying that. He points out in an argument that he develops that, look, what does the materialist have to play with? Complexity. Okay, whole brain emulation. In theory, you could have billions and billions of people, as many as you want, and if you need to have technology for their communication, you can have radios or you can have wireless, whatever you want. With enough people and enough technology, you can emulate every connection that is occurring in the brain. However, we do not believe that in addition to each person's consciousness, you would have a new consciousness of the crowd. And this argues very powerfully that the unity of consciousness does not emerge simply from complexity and configuring things in more and more complex ways. Intentionality is also a real problem. These systems, as understood in artificial intelligence, are physical systems. Well, physical systems, their capacities are limited to physical causes in the environment, by definition. But we can think of things which can't possibly have caused us to think about them. We can think about the future. Well, a future vacation cannot be causing you to think of it right now. You can think about possible but non-actual states of affairs. Yeah, such as a sensible U.S. president. It's not only non-actual, it's not going to be actual, as far as we can tell. You can even think of non-existent objects, whether they're fictional, like hobbits and elves, or even literally impossible, like round squares. None of these things that we're thinking about can possibly be causing us to think about them. So that kind of intentionality cannot be explained simply as a causal process of the environment on our brain. Why is this so important? Because it's through that power of intentionality that we create new ideas, imaginary worlds like Tolkien's Middle Earth, but also the wonderful new theories, algorithms, and technologies in science. That's where we have those ideas. Now, admittedly, computers today are used to help with all of this. But they're not envisioning and understanding those things because of their lack of intentionality. Now, I also would argue that teleology is absent in AGI systems. Yeah, they can solve problems, learn languages, learn our speech. They act as if they have goals, but they don't. Why not? Because if you don't have a subject that can think about the world, then you can't have your own goals. A system can simply contain information. It can't have personal goals because there is no unified subject to be a person. And so they don't literally desire to win chess or learn Swahili or do anything like that. Finally, mirroring reason is not the same as reasoning. Now, AGI systems do mirror reasoning. Now, it's an interesting fact. From an engineering point of view, you can certainly engineer a calculator or computer to do math badly. It's just an engineering problem, right? You can engineer it so it says that 2 plus 3 is 7. And when it solves logic problems, it gets them all wrong. That's perfectly possible to do from an engineering point of view. But in fact, we choose to implement the idea of an arithmetic logic unit so that these systems are obedient to the basic rules of mathematics and logic. Okay? But acting in accordance with reason or mirroring reason is not the same as reasoning. Why? What we normally think of as reasoning, at least at the conscious level, and I will agree there is also an unconscious kind that won't require this, but conscious reasoning requires you to have a subject which is unified at a time, persists over time, is able to think about its states, what they mean. Meaning is crucial. And it also has goals, problem-solving goals. There are actually many other things, but these four are especially required for the paradigm of reasoning where a mathematician or a logician is solving a problem. Let's take a very simple example. Let's suppose you've got two times, T1 and T2. At time T1, Jack thinks that A equals B and B equals C. At time T2, hopefully very soon thereafter, he concludes that A equals C, right? I pick this because it's such a very simple example of logical reasoning that anybody can see immediately. What's required for that to happen as an act of reasoning? Well, for one thing, you need to have a unified subject at a time. In order to see that that conclusion follows, it must be there is one subject that thinks both that A equals B and B equals C, because otherwise it'd be like one person believing A equals B and another that B equals C. So neither of them have a reason to draw any conclusion. Just as right now, right, one subject you're thinking and you're experiencing the sunlight and so forth, right, you can unify many mental states in just the one mind. But AGI systems really are just physical aggregates, and the information is distributed all over the place. Okay, it's in various places in RAM or auxiliary storage. And it consists of separable parts, right? You can take out memory, put it in, you can do all kinds of things to it. But there is no single subject that can literally have thoughts at a time within the system. It's always just a collection of parts. Okay, there's no unity there. But you also need a persistent subject over time. In order to reason, Jack has to survive long enough, right? So he starts believing A equals B and B equals C, and then concludes that A equals C when he draws a conclusion. Why is that required? Because otherwise it would be like Sarah believing A equals B and B equals C. Then Sarah ceases to exist, and Brian comes along and believes that A equals C. Well, Sarah did not survive long enough to draw the conclusion. And Brian gets the right answer, but did not reason to it because he never knew the premises. So you have to persist over time as the same thing in order to reason. Problem with AGI systems, when you look at them at a number of levels, if you look at the hardware, well, what really is a modern digital computer? It's an electronic device, and those switches are in a constant state of flux. They are being updated all of the time, and at the level of software, there's a transition from one instruction to the next and different data that's being processed, but there is really nothing which endures over time. There's simply a series of states or stages. And you'll know that if you've done Turing machine diagrams or finite automata and things of this kind. It's always simply going from one state to another. But there is nothing really which endures over time, no subject. Intentionality. You can only correctly infer the conclusion if you see it follows from what you believe, the content of your thoughts. You have to see the conclusion follows from what you believe. That's the intentional content. It's not good enough that you happen to be in a brain state at one time, and then you move into another brain state, and that brain state has the right answer. If you move into that brain state for reasons that have nothing to do with the premises, after all, a mad scientist could simply stimulate your brain so that you believe a certain conclusion, but you would not have reasoned to that conclusion. Okay, so that AGI system might be in state B5, let's say, that contains the information that A equals B and B equals C, let's grant that, and then it transitions to state B6 that contains the information that A equals C. That doesn't count as reasoning, though, unless it understands that A equals B and B equals C, unless it sees that A equals C follows, unless it draws that conclusion. That all requires intentionality. And notice it also requires subjectivity, because you have to, in the mental sense, see that it follows, right? There's a kind of a mental intuition there, and that requires a subject in order to draw that conclusion. Teleology, reasoning, is inherently goal-directed. I teach logic at my school, and when they get to the part where we're doing proofs in first-order logic, well, you know what the conclusion is in logic. The problem is solving it, right? So that there's the conclusion. That's your goal. You know what it is. Now you have to find a path between the given premises and that conclusion. So the whole thing is goal-directed. And in fact, I teach them to solve problems by what's called goal sub-goal analysis. If that's your final goal, then what sub-goal would you need to prove? And what sub-sub-goal would you need to prove? And so on. Right? That harnesses our ability to think of future goals, even though they can't cause us to think about them. So we consider premises to draw a conclusion. We consider a problem in order to develop a solution. So I argue that because they are not subjects and they don't have intentional states, it follows that they don't have their own goals. When we talk about their goals, we are simply ascribing our own goals to them as intermediaries. That's sometimes called derived intentionality. Or in other words, we can choose to think of a computer as thinking because it's solving a problem for us. And therefore, it's very easy to suppose that it really is thinking out the solution, whereas in fact, it's simply an intermediary between us. We're the ones who have a goal. We're the ones who want to solve a problem, and we're using the machine to do that. So yes, they can find lots of solutions to difficult problems, logic, math, science, and other problems, but they're not reasoning to these conclusions in the way that we do because they don't have the goal of finding those solutions. So what I've suggested is, quite probably, some of these AGI systems will be a major advance in weak AI. Maybe they will crack the idea of simulating general intelligence with clever, generalizable problem-solving strategies. And I would think that would help to explain some of the unconscious problem-solving that humans do. It could be very valuable psychologically. But what I don't think that it will do is it will capture the idea that I've spoken of as the intrinsic intelligence, where the paradigm is a conscious subject who is using consciousness to solve problems. I don't think, from anything that I've read anyway, that they will have intrinsic intelligence.